How do you measure trust? How exactly do you measure trust? You remember when you were a little kid and maybe you were in like a fort that you built in the woods? Anybody else do that? I grew up in the country and you were like with your best friend and you say, hey, can I tell you a secret? And they're like, yeah. And you're like, how can I trust you? And they're like, yes, you can trust me. I'm your best friend. Like, how do I know I can trust you? And they're like, pinky swear. And you do the pinky swear and you say you can trust you. But how do you actually know, how do you quantify the trust that you are placing in them at that moment? And oftentimes in our relationship with God and our faith, trust is kind of the same way, right? It's kind of hard to measure. Like we say things, and perhaps maybe even during the series, we've been talking about trusting God. You said like, you know, I've decided I want to trust God with more of my heart this series. Like, well, how do we measure your heart? Or I've decided to trust God with not just my heart, but just more of my mind and more of my thoughts. Like, well, how do we quantify that? Or maybe you said, like, you know, just deep down within the depths of my soul, I want to trust God more with more of my soul. But how do we know you're telling the truth? How would you know that I'm telling the truth? I mean, those things, heart, mind, and soul, a lot of things we talk about in church and we think about in our faith, they're kind of hard to measure. They're hard to count. They're hard to quantify. This series that we're finishing today on Moses and Exodus, those sort of things are kind of the things that the Israelites we see deal with. Because over and over in the story, Moses is challenged whether he's going to trust God and step into faith, and the Israelites are going, or if the Israelites are going to trust Moses and therefore trust God and step into what God is speaking through Moses for them to do. And we see, you know, different instances where they say they trust God, and then you're like, I don't know that we counted that well. I mean, there's this incredible scene where they walk across the sea on dry land and the Egyptians are swallowed up and they get to the other side, and the writer of Exodus says, and so they put their trust in God. We talked about that just a few weeks ago. So they put their trust in God. And it doesn't take long that they're in the desert and they're hungry and they're like, yeah, about that trust. Can we go back to Egypt where they have food? Like, we don't think we trust God so much anymore. It's like, so they said they trust God, but we're not really sure that they actually trusted God, because when things got hard, they didn't seem to trust God anymore. They said they had done something in their heart, in their soul, but it's kind of hard to count, kind of hard to quantify. It didn't seem like it was that much. And we also don't know, like, how many of them actually did some of the things that we read about them doing in Exodus, but deep down, they didn't have a lot of faith. They didn't have a lot of trust. Like, surely there were some guys when this bread, this manna stuff was falling from heaven that were gathering it up, and like, they're talking, and they're like, are we sure this is a good, this seems like a bad idea, right? Are you really going to eat that came from the ground? I don't know. Everybody else is going to do it. What are you going to do, right? I mean, but they just did it. But they didn't actually have a lot of trust. Well, if you weren't here at the very beginning, some imposter like was addressed as a Pharaoh. But if I didn't get to meet you then, my name is Carter McInnes, and I am lead pastor here at Mountaintop. And it is so good for you to be here, for me to get to see you. I'm so grateful that you've come today. I get the honor of pastoring this place, and I'm finishing this series near the end of the book of Exodus today that we've been looking at for 7 weeks, where this challenge that God continually gives to Moses and to his people, the Israelites. But this time, it will be about the two tangible ways that you can actually measure trust. The only two tangible ways, because we all are happily ready to give away our heart, our soul, you know, our mind, just say, oh, yeah, I trust God. But Moses is going to ask, as the mouthpiece of God, the Israelites to trust God, for the Israelites to trust God in two ways, with their time and with their money. He's going to ask them, are you willing to trust God with some tangible ways with your time? Are you willing to trust God with your resources? And before we wrap up today, I believe that we'll be challenged by the response of the Israelites. I know that I certainly am. And I'm also going to ask you to respond and take some tangible action steps. And one of the things, that the reason this is so important is I've had so many people over the last couple weeks, and you've been so kind to just be like, oh man, I'm loving this study. Our small group's going through it. We're loving it. I'm loving learning about Moses. Oh man, I'm reading things in Exodus I never knew. And that is all great, but our mission is not for you to know more about God. It is to invite you and equip you to follow Jesus. And so this series doesn't do much good if we don't actually take some actionable, real, tangible steps to follow Jesus. And perhaps something will happen among us like happens with the Israelites. And in fact, at the end of this passage, we are going to see Moses say something. This is unbelievable. He is going to say something that every pastor ever has dreamed of saying. Ever. That ought to be enough to at least keep you with me until the end, right? So, what this concluding story is about, the reason it's tangible is that God is asking them to follow him, to trust him with this really tangible thing. A lot of times it's just been like, you know, follow me, we're going to go here, we're going to do this, do what I say. But this is a trusting with a very tangible thing called the tabernacle. So this is the precursor to the temple. This is the very beginning stages of the people gathering in a place, the people of God gathering in a place to worship God. Moses and the Israelites have had this incredible, almost frenetic story where God has called Moses to go before Pharaoh and demand Israel's freedom after 400 years of Egyptian slavery. And of course, Pharaoh won't. So God sends 10 plagues and the king of Egypt finally relents. He changes his mind, of course, multiple times, but even the last time, he chases after them, and the Israelites find themselves between a sea and the Egyptian army, the most powerful military force on planet Earth. But they trust God, and God opens up the sea with two walls of water on each side, and they walk across on dry land, and the sea swallows up the Egyptian army that goes behind them to follow them. They're finally on their own, but now they're in the desert and they're starving. So God provides in this kind of another miracle. He provides food, bread, or the stuff we call manna from heaven, actually falls and lands on the ground. They collect it every morning. Quail for meat falls at their feet, and they even get water from a rock as a miracle for God for them to drink. God has given them the law on these two stone tablets written with the fingerprint of God with his instructions of how they're supposed to behave. But while Moses is up on the mountain, they build an idol and worship the idol. Moses is furious. He throws the stone tablets down at his feet and he smashes them to pieces. And God and Moses have this conversation that we talked about last week about what it's going to look like for them to move forward. And so this is the moving forward. Moses gets two more tablets. These are the second set of tablets. He goes to the Apple store, gets a replacement. This is the second set of tablets, and now they're on their own, and God is asking them to trust him with a very tangible action. He is going to set them apart to order their worshiping life. Now, they're a largely nomadic people. There's this idea that God is going before them, a pillar of cloud by day and fire by night. But they settle from time to time in these places. And whenever they settle, they are to build this tabernacle. And there are all kind of elaborate rules and instructions about what the worship life is supposed to be there and even how the thing is going to be built. And it is going to take considerable resources to build it. And this relates to us because we have taken on an initiative of our own that is going to require God's people stepping up with considerable resources. We call it, and perhaps you've seen some language around here, maybe you've been around, but if you're new, you've seen this and may wonder what this is all about. We call it the Four Campaign. About 6 months ago in February and March, we launched this 3-year initiative, and many of you have pledged money, many of you have given money, many of you have stepped up to serve in incredible ways to launch this vision. And there were three kind of focal points of the campaign: to be 4:1, that this was all about reaching one more person, to be four families. We have a focus. Our community is filled with young families, and we want to be a place to partner with parents to raise their kids and to be for Birmingham. We're not building this for us. We're not doing this for us. We've got enough room for us, but if we're going to make room for our city, then we're going to need more space to do it. And you're going to see the fruit of that generosity soon, because I have some great news. Just this week, we got a building permit. Come on. Come on. Yeah, just this week. And we are scheduled to start construction on Monday, October 30th. So 1 week from tomorrow. And listen, we wish this would have begun sooner, but Cherie Moody, who oversees all our events, especially Fall Fun Day, you know, the timing just might have been right for Cherie, because we have a petting zoo at the fall. The petting zoo has to have grass, and pretty soon our grass is going to be gone, but we're going to at least have one more fall with the petting zoo on the grass. So, because the next day the grass is going to start getting torn up. So hey, listen, we're grateful for that, and so we're super excited that what are we doing in this campaign. Some of you, if you're new in the last 6 months, you may be unsure. We are building a 16,000 square foot children's ministry addition. This will allow us to have elementary kids in our current space downstairs, a brand new nursery level on the main level, and on the bottom of that new wing will be our pre-K ages for Sunday mornings. We'll also be renovating our entire exterior, adding 45-ish parking spots on the main level, a brand new playground, because we want to make room for one more person, one more car in the parking lot. We want to be a place where families can know that they have a partner that is helping raise their kids. And we want to create space for Birmingham to meet Jesus. So I want to look at this story to end this series and sort of think about our story. Because just like they were called and challenged to build this tabernacle and they had a sacrifice, we're being challenged in the same way. It was a very tangible ask for the Israelites. And this is a very tangible ask for us. And this is sort of a six-month check-in. And so if you are new to Mountaintop, you've come since like April, and you've just seen some four campaign stuff around, but you're like, I don't really know what that's about. I've heard a little bit about it. I want to invite you in. I want to invite you to join the mission, to be a part of the calls to be 4-1, 4 families, and 4 Birmingham. Or maybe you were here, but you were just unsure. You weren't sure where you were at with the church, where you're at. And I would love to invite you to come and be a part of it. Now, often, and if you're brand new, you're like, oh, great, like I showed up and they're talking about money. Here's what I want you to know. We're doing this for you. It's all about you. For people just like you and your friends and your family and your neighbors and your coworkers, because we want to make room for one more person. So I hope you'll just hear that heart. Now, when money gets talked about in church, we often get fidgety, right? We often get fidgety, we often get nervous, because it feels like the preacher wants something from us. Am I the only person that ever felt this way? You're like, come on, this is really about his new jet, right? We don't have jets. That's phase 3 of the campaign. I'm just kidding. That's a joke. We're never going to have a jet. But that's why, right? You've seen things on TV, you've experienced it, maybe you've even been to a church. I've certainly been to a church. I grew up in a church that kind of had some shady stuff going on with money, and man, it disappoints you, it makes you skeptical, and so I totally get that. That is just true, because we have had some experiences. Here's what I would tell you here. We try to be as transparent, as open as we can be, and what this is about for us is so much more about leaning into our value of generosity. We believe in generosity. It is one of our values. We want to be a generous church filled with generous people who are responding to a generous God. That's who we are. That's what we want to be. But here's what I think. I think one of the reasons that we get fidgety about money and time is just what I talked about at the beginning, is that money and time are limited resources. Money and time are limited resources. And when I say trust God with your heart, or love God more, or you know, give God more of your soul, those feel like unlimited renewable resources. And they kind of are. If you've ever had children, or maybe nieces or nephews, like the first one in the family, you know, your first kid, you're just like, you look at that baby and you're like, I don't know how I could ever love another human being this much, ever. And then you have a second one. And you're like, huh. Turns out I had a deeper love reservoir than I had imagined. And it doesn't matter. And it's unlimited. And you know that true about friends. Like you can't have too many friends. You have like a best friend. And then years later, you meet another best friend. And we have all this room. So when we say those things that we're going to love God more, we're going to trust God more of our heart, those feel like unlimited resources because they kind of are. When you love one thing more, you don't have to love something else less. Right? To trust God more with your heart doesn't mean that your heart, you know, can't be in other places too. But that's not the way it is with time and money. Right, I mean, if I give God more of my money, then that means less money for me. Because I only make what I make, and I only have what I have in my account, and it actually has, I don't have a number by my heart. I actually have a number by my time. I take it so seriously, it's got decimals. Doesn't it? Like, it takes so seriously, it's got decimals, and we all have the same amount of time. So if I'm going to give God more of my money, then I have to ask myself, like, whoa, okay, that means more for him, less for me, less more for what he's doing, less for what I want to do. If I give God more from time, then that means those hours I give to him that I can't, you know, I don't get to keep for myself and do what I want to do. So this idea, it really, here's what we're going to be challenged with. Do I trust God's math? Do I trust God's math? Because here's what I want to tell you about your money and your time, this unlimited resource that you have. It does not make mathematical sense. It does not make mathematical sense. If I were to give you like $100 and I'd be like, okay, are you going to be better off with $100 or $90? And you're like, is this a trick question? $100, right? $10. Is a half a cheeseburger. Right? You remember when it was 4 cheeseburgers? Now it's like a half a cheeseburger, but right? So that does not make mathematical sense, and yet the Lord calls us to tithe, to give 10%, and says, no, listen, your life, your heart, your relationship with me, and even your money is going to be better off at 90% than 10%. And the more you trust me, 11%, 12%, the more you're going to see my providence, the more you're going to see my math working in your life. So the question you're going to, I mean, same thing. Like, I mean, if I get up early on Sunday morning because I'm going to go serve, then that means less time for me. That means, I don't get to do the thing I want to do. Do you trust God's math? Here's the cool thing about this, and I say this right before we dive into this scripture. So many people say, I want to see a supernatural move of God in my life. And this is one of the most clear ways that I can promise you that you will see the supernatural work of God in your life. If you will trust God with these tangible things in your life, God will do things in your life that do not make mathematical sense. If you will trust God. Do you trust, do I trust God's math? So this all starts in Exodus 35. If you got your Bibles and you will look at them, and if you don't have a Bible, there are some free on the bookshelves if you're here in the room and you want to take one with you when you leave. So if you're there watching at home, thanks for joining us. And if you want to look along with Exodus 35, listen to what it says. Moses said to the whole Israelite community, this is what the Lord has commanded. From what you have, take an offering for the Lord. Everyone who is willing is to bring to the Lord an offering. Now, there are two key phrases in this passage that I just love. Two key phrases. It's the word willing and what you have. Here's what God says. God asks for willingness with what you have. When it comes to money, I just always noticed that we are always willing to give God from what we don't have. You ever said this? Man, if I was rich, I'd give the church $1 million. Man, if I was a multimillionaire, I'd pay for that building all by myself. You ever said something like that? You ever thought something like that? Why are we so willing to give God what we don't have? Right? You know, boy, if I would tithe if I made $1 million a year, for sure. And I'd be like, let me get this straight. You won't give God 1,000 out of 10,000, but you're going to give him 100,000 out of 1,000,000? Do you know how you learn to give 100,000 out of 1,000,000? You give 1 out of 10 and 10 out of 100. Teenagers, college students, man, start now. God is never going to, when we stand before God, he's not going to say like, well, why weren't you rich? What he asks of us, what did you do with what you have? And what you have is different than what the person next to you has, and it's different than what I have, and it's different from the person in front of you has. It doesn't matter the amount we have. God asks for willingness with what you have and willingness with what I have. Generosity towards God's mission is not about an amount. It's about a willingness of the heart. And I love this because it's so detail-oriented. If you are a detail-oriented person, listen to what Moses says. Do you remember what it said there? That you're to make offerings with what you have. And then he says, if you're wondering what that means, of gold, silver, and bronze, do you reckon those are worth a lot? Probably so. Still worth a lot. Blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, you get that at the Hobby Lobby now. It's a little different. Than the gold and the silver. And fine linen, goat hair, ram skins dyed red, and another type of durable leather, acacia wood, olive oil from the light. You pick that up at Publix. That's kind of cheap. Spices for the anointing oil and the fragrant incense, and onyx stones and other gems to be mounted on the ephod and the breast piece. It's all this detailed stuff. I love it because all of these things have different values. They are different gifts, but they are all needed for the project. They are all needed for what God has in store. They're all needed for the total price of the building. Our vision for what we feel like God has laid out before us in the Four campaign is a 3-year focus. And we still have ministry due over 3 years. So the reason that we think about this is like, it's not just about building a building, it's about doing ministry. It's $10.5 million in ministry. Our budget is about $3.5 million a year. And that's so we have the maintenance on our building, it's so we have our staff, it's so we can do ministry. And we're not stopping ministry over the next 3 years. We've got important ministry to do. We had 268 students at our fifth quarter this year. We're going to continue doing ministry to students. We had 53 fifth and sixth graders at a Mountaintop 56 overnight a couple Friday nights ago. And I'm just so thankful for the people that stayed overnight with 53 fifth and sixth graders. We've got important ministry to do with preteens. It's such a hard time. We had 14 baby dedications a few weeks ago. 14, like 11 or 12 families up here together. We got more families to partner with. We have important ministry to do. The next 3 years are not just about building a building. The next 3 years are also about the good ministry that's happening. And our construction is about $9.5 million. And that comes out to $20 million total, because you're good at math. You got that. 6 months ago, we had so many generous people like many of you pledge $10,492,043 to the Four campaign over the next 3 years. And we have an expectation of $3,744,000 of also what we call unpledged giving. Some people didn't pledge but continue to give. We track that pretty closely, and we're right on pace in hitting our mark in that. So that totals up, our expectation is about, over the next 3 years, is $14,236,043 total that our people, that we expect you and your generosity and your generous spirits to give. We're so grateful for that. That means that remaining, we have about $5,763,957 left. Now, those are big numbers. Those are big numbers for all of us. Some of you work in like the financial part of your business, and you're like, I see big numbers like that all the time. Some of you don't, and you're like, those are really big numbers. But here's what I know, like, none of our personal accounts look like this. right? None of those are really big numbers for all of our lives. And most of us on a day-to-day basis don't deal with big numbers like that. And it can sort of seem overwhelming. But there was, and we just kind of get, and that's why I love what Moses says. That's why I love the instructions from God. Because the person that could only give goat hair would have said, I can't fund that tabernacle. Not asking you. What God's asking you is, if you got some goat hair, can you offer it to the Lord? Somebody else that had olive oil said, I don't have linen. I don't have all the dyes. That's a really expensive fabric in our culture. I don't have that. It's not asking you that. Do you have some olives that you've gotten some oil from? And could you offer that? And that's often the way it is. You look at those numbers, and I look at those numbers, and they seem like, whoa, they're so big. How can I make a dent of that? And some of you are like, all I can give is about 40 extra bucks a month. And maybe you didn't even pledge 6 months ago, or maybe you haven't given because you feel like that won't make a dent in millions of dollars. And here's what I always say. You know what? You know what 40 bucks a month will buy? A can of paint. About 40 bucks. And we're going to need lots of cans of alabaster white paint. That's our white. And you think, what's the big deal about this paint? Because here's what you need to know about this paint. This paint is going to cover the walls of a room in which a third grader is going to learn that for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And that third grader knows that they are mean to their sister sometimes, and they don't always obey their parents, and sometimes they tell some little white lies, and sometimes they make fun of other kids at school, and they have this shame because deep down they don't think they're really good enough for God to love, and it is going to hit them all of a sudden that God doesn't love them because they are good enough, that God loves them because he is good enough. And it is going to happen in the room that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars but is covered in the walls, covers with your $40 can of alabaster white paint. And your $40 can be a part of that story or not. Would you just give? Would you be willing with what you have? Some of you can say, well, I can do a little bit more than that, but I still don't feel like I can make a dent. I mean, I can give 100, 200, maybe 300 bucks a month. Maybe it's the first time for you to step up to tithing, but I don't know what that'll do in millions of dollars, but with your 100 or 200 or 300 bucks a month, we're gonna buy a couple of iPads that year. And that iPad is going to help a new mom check in. And she is always worried about visiting a new church, and she's tried a few, and it's one of the reasons she stayed away from church, because her kid has some allergies, and she never feels like any child care worker takes it seriously. And she has, with fear and trepidation, dropped her kid off with a worker who she wasn't even sure heard what her kid's allergy was. But when she checks in on that iPad, and it gives her an opportunity to put what her child's allergies is, she's going to feel loved, and she's going to feel seen for the very first time in her life in a church, and she's going to decide, this is the church that I want to raise my child, to disciple my child, to partner with me in raising with my child. And she's going to see it on an iPad that your $100, $200, $300 a month bought. But some of you have capacity to do more. Catch? Steal. It ain't cheap. But some of you have capacity to give $100,000, $250,000 over the next 3 years, and buy some steel. Nobody's going to see it, but it's going to be the most expensive part of the building. It's going to be in the walls, covered up with sheetrock and $40 cans of paint. But it is going to be the structure where marriages find healing under. It's going to be under which the place under which singles find community, college students find a home away from home, people struggling with addiction find freedom, empty nesters find new friends, young married find somebody to walk along with them. There's going to be so much life change happen in between those walls of steel and underneath that ceiling of steel. And you can be a part of that story. You have some gold and silver to give. And that's your part of the story. So what I would just want to ask you is, would you just be willing to give from your goat hair and your olive oil and your gold, some paint, some iPads, and some structural steel? But that wasn't the last ask that Moses gave the Israelites. He says, all who are skilled among you are to come and make everything the Lord has commanded. You see, they weren't supposed to just raise the money for a building. They were actually going to build the building. He goes into all detail after this, Moses does, about all the tent posts and the pegs and the curtain and the lampstands and the altar. God needed more than just resources. He needed people who were resourceful. He needed people to give their time. We're not trying to simply build a facility. We're trying to build people. We're not trying to build a place that children love. We're trying to build a place where children are loved. Because you know this, I know this. Buildings don't disciple people. People do. And buildings don't disciple children. People do. And I want to tell you something. We're committed to creating the best children's ministry environment in our city. But it will not make a dent in the life of one child if there are not people committed to discipling these little ones. Buildings don't disciple people. Children do. And you don't have to wait 1 minute to do this. You don't have to wait 3 years. You don't have to wait till the building is done. We have opportunities for you to serve in our children's and student ministry right now. I asked Melissa last Sunday night. We had a dinner for some from new folks at our church. I said, Melissa, how many people do you need? And I love her leadership so much. She didn't say like, oh, like 20 to 30. You know what she said? 26. I need 26 people right now because we are so at capacity in our children's ministry that she's looking for 26 more people to pour into the lives of little ones. You can help disciple some children to let people know that we are for one more child and four families and for Birmingham. I'm asking you to serve the next generation. I'm asking you to give of your money and your time. And that's all Moses had done at this point. Just ask. What do you think they're going to do? If you've been with us for the last 7 weeks, their track record has not been so good. But listen to what happens. Then the whole Israelite community withdrew from Moses' presence, and everyone who was willing and whose heart moved them came and brought an offering to the Lord for the work on the tent of the meeting. For all its service, and for the sacred garments, all who are willing, men and women alike, came. This isn't about how much extra time you've got or extra cash you've got. My hunch is you don't have any. I don't have much, right? I don't have a whole lot of time. I don't have a whole lot of extra money. This is about what are you willing to do because your heart has been moved. Their heart had been moved by God. The Israelites had been saved from Pharaoh, and we've been saved from hell. The Israelites had been delivered from the sea, and we've been delivered from our sin. We're building a place for our children to learn to worship, just like they were building a place to pass down their faith and their stories from generation to generation. Is that enough for my heart to be moved? Are you willing to withdraw and pray and seek the Lord and say, Lord, how are you moving in my life? For the Israelites, their response was just getting started. And something astonishing happened. The people continued to bring free will offerings morning after morning. So all the skilled workers who were doing all the work on the sanctuary left what they were doing and said to Moses, this is crazy. The people are bringing more than enough for doing the work of the Lord commanded to be done. They just had goat hair piling up. Gold bars piling up and olive oil and vats. They had more than enough. They had more than enough. And here's, and they had more than enough. And I just believe that we are the same. We are the same way. Morning after morning. It's so much that the workers have to tell Moses, we are overloaded with supplies, and that it wasn't that they had this big donor, is that they were in it together. All of us is more than enough. All of us is more than enough. I can't write a check to pay for this building. You probably can't write a check to pay for this building, but you got some goat hair. You got some gold. And I can't serve every classroom, and you can't serve every classroom, but you've got some time. You can serve one. So let's do it together. You bring your goat hair, and somebody else will bring their silver. You buy a can of paint, somebody else will buy an iPad. You work the student ministry snack bar, and somebody else will lead a high school girl small group. You work the kids check-in, and somebody else will lead third grade boys. All of us is more than enough. And if we would do what the Israelites did, God might do something among us that he did in them. Where Moses says something, remember I told you, that every pastor has dreamed of saying. Then Moses gave an order, and they sent this word throughout the camp. No man or woman is to make anything else as an offering for the sanctuary. And so the people were restrained from bringing more because they had all what they already had was more than enough to do all the work. Can you imagine? Listen, every pastor has dreamed of doing this. To stand up and go, guys, for the next couple months, we're not going to take up an offering. You've given too much. We've paid off all the debt. We've done everything we could do. We've done all the maintenance on the building we could possibly do. We have started giving it away. So just please restrain yourself from giving next week. Imagine a world where Melissa and Josh say, please, nobody else sign up to serve students and children. We have too many people trying to invest in the lives of our little ones and raise the next generation. Please, go work in the parking lot. Like, do something else, but don't serve with us. We have more than enough. What would it look like if we just trusted God with things that you can measure? And that's all I want to ask you is the two things that Moses asked the people. Will you trust God with your money? Will you trust God with your time? If you are giving sacrificially, thank you. If you pledged 6 months ago, you're working toward it, you're making a dent in that pledge, thank you. If you are serving, whether you are on the coffee team, the tech team, the greeter team, the children's ministry team, student team, wherever you're serving, it doesn't matter what team, thank you. But if you're not, what would it look like for you to step in to serve, to use your gifts? Specifically to pour into the next generation, to be for families who need a partner. And if you haven't given, maybe you didn't make a pledge because you weren't sure where you were at, you weren't sure about the vision, what would it look like for you to step up and say, I trust God with my money? If you're new to Mountaintop, but you've decided this place is your home, what would it look like for you to trust God with your money? You know what I want for you? I want for you to see what it looks like on the other side of trusting God in a tangible way. That's what I want for you. God doesn't need anything from us. He wants something for us. And we're going to close with a story from a couple in our church that saw what it looked like on the other side of trusting God.
Three years ago, a really close friend of ours shared a hard time that this person was going through financially. They got themselves into a situation that they felt like there was no way out of. David's calling from God is finances. So he really helped this person put together a budget and just kind of showed them, here's what your finances would look like today. Here's how you can get out of this. I continued to check in with the person, and so they shared again the next year that, nope, still in this situation. And probably around that time is when I took a job. About 6 months into the job, I get a call from my boss. He let me know that I was gonna be receiving a bonus.
The first reaction was like, you know, I'm using logic, right, for this situation, which is, well, we have our own bills and we have our own things that we wanna do with this money.
And immediately just felt, just the still small voice, this isn't for you. And it happened to be around the same amount that this friend of ours needed.
I mean, when Danielle came to me with what she wanted to do with the money, there was concern about kind of just the relationship between us and our friend and how this might impact things. I had to sort of step back and say, okay, if if you're all in on this, then I'll be all in with you.
I called my friend and said, you know, we'd like to help you. And this person immediately said, no, absolutely not. That's when I said, if it helps, this wasn't my idea. This was God's idea. He put it on my heart. A couple days later, this person called back and they said, okay, only because you said that God put this on your heart. It felt like a stronghold was lifted when it was paid. And that's when I felt like, okay, I need to ask this person if they want to accept Jesus. It just felt right. And they said yes immediately. And everything in this person's life has changed. Finances, relationships, career. It's just...
It's like a new trajectory. Like knowing our friend's past and just hardship, right, that they've experienced along the way and even into adulthood. It's almost like from this moment forward, they were on a completely different path. Seeing blessings that happen in Danielle's career from this, seeing how our friend has made a complete 180 with their life and their relationship with God as well. You know, it kind of changed something in me. It changed kind of just the way I looked at tithing from kind of a math equation to more of just going by faith, and the way I pray and has completely changed to be just more grateful for things. I think that was kind of his way of saying, like, come to me.
This experience helped grow our spiritual life together. I feel like that ties back to when God spoke to my heart and said, watch what I do. Like, be faithful, be obedient in what I'm asking you, and watch the blessings. And that's what's happened.
Man, I just think that's a great line. Just watch what I do. I think when God asks us to trust God, to trust Him with something so tangible, I think He's just want to say, just watch what I do. And I love David's heart there that he's the math guy in the family, but he's learned to trust God's math. When you leave, you're going to get one of these cards. It's a four campaign card, and this is kind of new. Even if you did one months ago, you can still take one. There's a way that you can participate even if you've done a financial and serving. But there are three areas. One is financially, and it's got three options. I'd love for you to. I don't want you to do this today. I want you to do like the Israelites. I want you to withdraw. I want you to go away for a week and just think about it, pray about it, read scripture on it. There's three opportunities in the financial. Would you think about giving something monthly? Maybe you've never done that in your life, and you say, I'm going to pledge this. You might be a young person, and like you don't have a lot, but it's like, man, I'm going to buy some cans of paint. Maybe you're just going to step into tithing monthly. There's a yearly one. Maybe you work on commission, and you can't, you know, your income's just different, but you say, I'm going to commit to doing something yearly up through 2026 on this. Or maybe you're like, I don't know, I've got things are up in the air now, but I want to give a one-time gift to this. And maybe it's to buy some of that steel. But you got an opportunity to put the one-time gift there. The second area is serving. And we're focusing solely on Mountaintop Kids and Mountaintop Students, because those are the places that we need the most people to be for families. And I don't want you to fill a spot. I want you to join the mission to invite teenagers to follow Jesus and invite children to follow Jesus and be a part of their story. And I'd love for you to pray about doing that. And the last one on the very back says that I will make a commitment to pray fervently on the fourth day of every month through 2026. Day four, for Birmingham. Four families, four one. Day four, for them. You can set an alarm, do it at 4 o'clock on the fourth of every month. 4-4-4. And everyone can be involved in that. And what I want to just ask you to do is take that, withdraw with God, pray about it, bring it back next week, and you can just place it in one of those offering boxes all around. And I hope that the Lord will do what He wants to do in you, and you'll be obedient, and I'll be obedient. That's all we can do. Hey, it's been great to be with you today. I want to invite you back next Sunday as we begin a series that is unlike any I have ever taught in over two decades of ministry. It's called The Unseen Me: Mental, Emotional, and Spiritual Health in the Kingdom of God. For some reason, we have been hesitant to talk about mental and emotional health in the church in spiritually healthy ways, but this is an epidemic in our culture, and if we don't talk about it, who will? We're also going to have a lot of fun with Fall Fun Day and food and trucks and inflatables and a petting zoo. So it's a great opportunity to invite a friend to a fun day. But it's also a great opportunity to invite a friend who might be struggling and saying, hey, this won't solve all the problems, but would you come sit with me? Because I'm walking in this beside you and with you. So see you next Sunday for Fall Fun Day and as we begin The Unseen Me. And come back Tuesday night for a night of worship at 7 p.m. It's going to be a great night of singing and praise. Remember, God is for you. We are for you. Let's be for Birmingham.